From our headquarters in Oslo, Norway, and on behalf of our host, Robbie Peralta, welcome to the Mnemonic Security Podcast.
We are often asked what we do for a living, and our answer is usually cybersecurity. What we really mean, though, is that we are defending. Or as my favorite podcast host, Rick Howard, would say, reducing the probability of material impact to my organization due to a cyber event. And that's it. Nothing else matters. And this simple statement is the pillar on which we can build an entire InfoSec program. However, in a cyber context, the word defending has a lot of nuance. We're actively defending our organizations against material impact, both in a proactive and reactive manner. And when asking for a budget and answering the infamous why you need the money, you probably don't need to reinvent the wheel. Someone has taken that battle before, and their arguments will probably be useful for you as well. So, what are we doing in cyber, and why do we need more money? Jeff Bartow.
Hey,
welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if you are a third timer or a fourth timer by now, but you are at least a veteran of the Mnemonic Security Podcast.
Yeah, hey. I think I've done a short one. I think I've done three. I've given two presentations and probably three podcasts.
And I wouldn't be surprised if I ask you again, even after this one. But hey, Mr. Bartow, you were in Norway. This summer, and you held a presentation for a very select few of our clients, and I have not been able to forget it. And you called it "We Are Defending," and I was thinking today that we would go through that because I think that it is worth everybody's time to. We're going to share a presentation, go through a presentation for the first time on the podcast, so we'll see how that works. But I think it is something that should be on the top of the mind for anybody that ever has to defend why they are investing in security. We are defending. So why don't you pull that up on your side? And in the meantime, while you do that, I will take a trip down memory lane for everybody that doesn't remember Jeff Bartow. I don't think you sleep very much. You're the CISO of a very, very large hedge fund in the U.S. You also are a locksmith, so you're both physical and digital security. You do all the testing of products yourself. You're a machine. And I will leave it there, right as you pull up the slide.
Did that work?
Jeff? It did. Okay. The floor is yours.
All right. Thank you so much. So I've written a few series on cyber defense. So the concept is strategy and implications on strategy and architecture and design. So we're defending. We're defending in three different ways. We're reactive, we're active, and we're proactive. How are we reactive? Well, we have incident response. We analyze our events. We wait for the next threat to emerge. We have incidents, breaches, and mistakes. So I put in mistakes there because that's one of the drivers of being reactive. Somebody makes a mistake, a configuration mistake, rolls out the wrong product. There's a lot of things that can cause a mistake. So they're not really a security incident per se, but they can emerge as a security incident. We're active. Well, we improve our cyber programs. We discuss and review with peers and providers. So we invest in new tech. We invest, improve our processes, improve our personnel. So if we're regulated, we have to follow regulations, and we have requirements to meet as well. And we patch and scan for known vulnerabilities. So we look for things that could be vulnerable. We attempt to patch, we scan, we try to improve. So it's an ever-evolving cycle with active. So there's no real end concept of being active. And we're proactive. So our controls are designed for a defense in depth concept. We use intelligence to uncover emerging threats. We attack our own environment. We perform threat profiling, risk assess to a degree, and we automate. So threat profile and risk assess to a degree. So risk assessing is a very interesting concept in the proactive arena. What is a risk? What is a threat? How are these associated to your particular environment? So recently there's a 0 day on an exchange. There's two vulnerabilities on exchange right now, and everybody started jumping up and down saying this is bad, but we're getting news that it's requires a lot to be exploited, and it there's a lot of fraud out there as well. So when we look at risk profiling and risk assessments, there's a degree of threat profiling where you can get very technical, a tactical threat assessment, which I created a framework for. And that kind of drives real world examples, such as the use of PowerShell as a tool, data exfiltration. So this kind of goes back and forth into that. And of course, we have to risk assess. So to assess risk, we can do it many, many different ways. There's many models, there's many methodologies of risk assessment. So that is kind of a mature concept inside the proactive. So we cannot predict the future. If we could, it would be, maybe jobless. So I don't know when the next solar winds or the next log4j, the next 0 day. I kind of went over one that was kind of everybody jumped up and down about. The next fish, the next fishing campaign. There are many, many, many phishing campaigns a year. Next misdirected email, next misconfiguration, and the next incident. So we can't predict what's going to happen. Therefore, we have to defend against what we think is the prominent risks and threats to our environment. So proactive goals, now these are goals, some are not achievable, but these are the concepts that I've heard of and have seen over the last 20 years. So we want to have zero incidents within our control. So the key to that is within our control. We can't determine a third-party application that has vulnerabilities associated with it that start to get exploited without us knowing it. So we want to have zero incidents within our control. So practically speaking, we want to reduce incidents over time. That is a real goal here. We want to be ahead of threats. So that's another interesting concept here, to be proactive. Can we be ahead of the threat? We want to wait for the next threat to emerge, then assess. So that's what we end up doing. So going back to SolarWinds, nobody had any idea that was going on for months. And with that, we have many, many examples, Log4j is another example, of what impact a risk or a threat could have. So we wait for it to become common knowledge or known, and then we assess how risky is this particular emerging threat to our environment. And we want to capture everything. So that's an interesting concept. It goes back and forth in waves. Capture every log, take everything, chop it up, a lot of raw data, a lot of interesting artifacts out of that data. So practically speaking, we have limits on what can be stored. Now today, it's not as prominent, depending on how you're using the cloud, how you're using storage, how you're gathering logs. But the concept of capturing everything, when you look at it, is within what is logical, and then what can we take to the next level with capturing, Windows logs, capturing network traffic, capturing, whatever your controls will take in. So the practical implications, the system is only as good as how it was implemented. So this is a pretty profound statement. I treat the cyber environment as a holistic system with subcomponents and subcomponents built into it. And that's how I engineer things. So as the system works, it's only as good as how you build it and how you implemented it. You can have the worst control in the world and it would actually work well for your environment, or you can have the best control in the world. I'm just saying that, though. You know, what is the best, what is the worst? But it's only as good as how you implement it and then how you keep it running. So how you improve the system and the components and the subsystems that make up your controls and your framework and everything you drive into the cyber program. So a system could have various procedures. It could have various people interacting with it. It could be automated. So there's a lot that goes into the design and how it functions and how you continuously improve it. Have multiple views of the same data. So this is something that I strive for. It's works in about 90-95% of the environment, but when you look at the products and the vision of companies that provide controls, network monitoring, endpoint EDR, DLP, so when you look at it, you could have a singular subsystem. I don't know many people that run multiple endpoint AV products, but after that, you could have multiple views of network traffic. So you may have a product that looks at it in a different way than another product that looks at it. You can use open source. There's a lot of different ability to put in depth into the same area of what you're trying to watch for and what you're trying to look for. And remember, companies have a vision and they build that vision on how they progress the product. So when you look at various vendors out there, you know, we are trying to stop 99.9% of, you know, attacks, or we can stop an attack dead in its tracks. That may be true on known threats, but it may not be true on unknown threats. So having multiple views and being able to use your subsystems or your controls are the key to this. And you don't have to go elaborate. So, I mean, open source is open source. You can get, you know, some products that are very specific. Some products are very general. So methods are reused. So DGA, you know, all know DGA was used in SolarWinds, but it was also used many, many years ago in Conficker. And there's been DGA out there for quite a while. So the concept of reuse, of hackers reusing methods and tactics, kind of goes into, you know, if you look at phishing, you know, attach a Word document, attach a PDF, then hide it under an image, then give them both. I mean, it just kind of evolves and evolves into almost a reuse type concept here. So when you look at that, you have to make sure that not only are you looking at what's on the edge of emerging threats, but what has happened in the past. So if you're not detecting DGA, I would highly recommend you find a way of detecting DGA. You know, and as it progresses, you'll see, you know, reuse. I read an article recently that hardware hacking is starting to come back into view with certain threat actors out there. So don't just risk assess, perform tactical threat analysis. So when you look at a breach, if you're able to get an understanding of a breach and from another, you know, from, you know, whoever publishes it, here's how it goes through, or here's the indicators of APT-10 or whatever group out there, FIN7, you know, when you look at that, try to do a similar methodology of attack into your environment and then pivot. So a tactical threat analysis says, okay, so say I come in, I'll assume breach. Phishing, they export to Mega NZ. So if I try to export to Mega NZ, do any of my subsystems or controls go off? Should we be blocking it? Should the firewall, you know, completely block this as an action performed by anybody in the organization? So your organizations and what the culture is there will dictate if you're allowed to block it. So if you can't block it, you got to detect it. Likelihood is only for those who did not get impacted. So that's kind of an interesting statement. So if you got hit by ransomware, your likelihood's 100%. If you didn't get hit by ransomware yet, or know that, you know, you've blocked it, then your likelihood is probably zero. But it's it was an old measurement. I remember what's the likelihood of this, and it's very hard to really determine that. But a tactical threat analysis will assist in the concept of, if somebody did get in, can they pivot? Can they move laterally? You know, these are the things that are real world examples here. And of course, your risk would be data loss or data exfiltration, depending on the group that hit you, as well as how, you know, ransomware. If you detonated ransomware on somebody in HR, what are all the files that would be hit by that? And if they move to another system. So when you look at the assessment, not only take a concept, but see where they land. They land on an IT person's PC, and then that's way more riskier, right, than if they land on another department's PC. So that's, there's a lot of factors that go into that and a lot of design. So that kind of, that concept of that analysis drives back into your system. Can your system handle and detect ransomware and block it from, you know, block it completely, or get to a point where you encrypt 100 files and it kills the process? So those are the types of things you kind of can measure through there practically. Block the known, detect the unknown. You must block what is universally known. So this is kind of goes back to reuse and the concept of hackers reusing techniques, tactics, things like that. So you must block what is universally known. If you're not blocking ransomware variants from a year ago, you're really struggling. So then we can detect the unknown. So once you get to the point where you're satisfied that if a variant or if a method that is pretty well known is detectable by assessing it, then you can start working on detecting the unknown. So what is unknown? So I've heard them called singular events, anomalies, rare events, things like that. So when you look at it, you know, what is an unknown? Having a single PC in the environment, look up a website and they're the only PC in the environment that has ever looked this up. Those are the types of unknowns that you can go through. We can mitigate to acceptable levels of risks for the unknown. So containment is the big part of the unknown. When we have to contain, we have to take a look at how we can segment, section off, block, shut down, containment. So what is acceptable levels that has to be decided between you and the business? So if a major platform is down for more than an hour, then you have to look and redesign your subsystems and your systems to handle the fact that it can't be down for an hour. So how do you mitigate and how do you recover, and all those factors go into the design and back in your subsystem. Then, of course, the system we create directly impacts its goals. So when you look at this whole concept here, again, the system is your program, your controls, everything that goes into your ecosystem of cybersecurity, and if you're involved with it, physical security. So that has to function as a system and be designed as a system, not as individual components that one person has to run this, one person has to log in, you know, run this. It's not a disjointed system. It's got to be as integrated as possible. So there's a lot of ways to do this. There's a lot of, you know, tie-ins, products now, and companies now are allowing other companies to create plugins, to use the API, to integrate holistically into a system. And that's what you're trying to design. That's the difficult part of security. So security is both easy and hard. The easy part of it is to go in and say, oh, you're using passwords that are on the RockYou, you know, hash file. So that's easy to do. The hard thing is to design a system that is resilient, integrated, and allows for growth and allows for the emerging threats and the unknown to be detected. So that goes into the whole system approach. Security is simple and complex. So improvement, continuous improvement. I can't stress that enough. Products, companies can deviate from what they do and it just doesn't work anymore. Improvement is the key. That's if we don't improve, if you look back 4 years ago, if you haven't improved from 4 years ago, you're pretty much exposed to every vulnerability or threat out there. So improvement is the key. If we don't look at a whole system operability, we become disjointed. So I went over this a few times. Integration, automation, automation to a point, right? So don't rely on one subsystem to take care of your network monitoring traffic or monitoring network traffic. That doesn't make any sense to me. So for instance, I look at traffic coming into the DMZ differently than I look at traffic from the DMZ into our environment. They're two different types of traffic. So understanding what you're trying to achieve, why you're trying to achieve it, the threats associated with it, and how you can handle this. So I have some examples where I was looking for products that didn't even exist. So oddly enough, a few have come out in the past couple of years, but products that I would use in the environment that are low impact, of course, to the employees, that's kind of key. And then they work, so you have to test them. The easiest side of security is taking all the subsystems, people, process, tech, and operating these in a silo or semi-connected functional manner. So I kind of went over this as well. So subsystems are people, process, and tech, right? So we need tech, we need people, we need process. That's the three cores of running a system. And with that, if we're siloed or semi-connected, then your whole system is not working as efficiently and you can't improve it. And the complex side is creating a hole in our operating system. So closing, we are defending. Reactive is necessary. We have to react. Again, we don't know what's out there. Proactive is continuous, not a goal. There's no goal in proactive. You're continually reviewing, improving, looking for gaps, looking for threats, taking the latest intel and applying it to your environment. So intel, you can weed out what is important to you, what is not important to you, what can impact your environment. And this is how you ought to assess this. And active must not get tar pitted. So long ago, there was this whole concept of tar pitting traffic and running it through a slower flow. So unfortunately in security, being active, you cannot get tar pitted or you cannot get slowed down. So block the known and detect the unknown. Without a whole system approach, this cannot be achieved. Thank you.
When you presented this presentation at our event, everybody was quiet afterwards. And I was looking around the room, and I was sitting there, I was still stuck on slide two for you because you have so much good information there that I was just trying to chew through it all. And I think that was the same for everybody else. That's why you're here today. Now it's recorded so people can go back. What was the context of how you used it the first time? I love how your dogs come home right when you finish too. That's perfect.
Yeah, we may have to wait a minute here. Let me just swing the door shut. Hold on.
No problem.
So let's go back over that one.
What was the context for you making that? Yeah. I was just wondering, what was the context of you making that presentation? What was it, what I sort of saw in my head, like you had some board presentation or something like that, or what was it?
So a lot of companies that I've seen or I know people at, they get into more of a non-holistic approach to security, more of a disjointed security concept, right? Oh, we have this product that does this, and we don't need anything else to do that, right? So when you look at the tech that you buy, when you look at the how you implement it and put it together and the people that use that tech, I've seen a lot of what's called shelfware exist. I've seen a lot of products that are actually good and were not implemented correctly. And I see a different approach. I see more of a risk. Well, I don't want to say risk driven. We should be risk driven, but more of a, here's what everybody else is doing type concept, right? Here's what everybody else does. And with my background, I'm an engineer, and I took a look and say, now if I applied engineering into these principles, right, into security, how do you engineer a solution? How do you build a bridge? How'd they ever build that bridge in Norway over that fjord? That was amazing to me. They had a short window to do it, and oddly, they were able to pull it off. It was pretty amazing to me. They dug the tunnel in Switzerland through the Alps. That was amazing to me. So looking at engineering and looking at how it's applied and the architecture and the design, I started looking about, we're relying on our vendors to get it right. So we rely on our endpoint AV, whatever you want to call it, EDR product to block CryptoLocker, right? But does it? Can you download CryptoLocker and have a block? So those are the questions that I started looking at, and how do you, test this? How do you go back? I have years worth of malware, and I still pull out the older malware and put it on a test box to see if it gets deleted right away, right? It's pretty much by hash. But then you look at the emerging stuff, what's coming out, and you can, download that and test that. So as I looked at how would I put this together, and, the concept on cyber defense comes from, many books. There was, On War. There was, how do you tactically go through this? And we won't attack unless you're paid to attack. So my company does not attack APT-10. We would never attempt to do that. But when you look at it, we have to defend against what we perceive or what is known to be threats to our environment, what threat groups would be after us, what does phishing look like? So with phishing, I look at phishing through two different lenses. I look at it through what one provider or one vendor we have, and I look at it through a completely different vendor, kind of an off to the right vendor, and you should see the differences in how they analyze phishing. So that's key to me, because if it gets through the first layer, I got the second layer, and then I got the third layer. So as you look at that and as you go through that, it can get costly unless you pay attention to how you're putting it together.
You've had these thoughts in your head for a long time, right? And you probably learned things at different times. How do you operationalize this today? If somebody's listening to this right now for the first time and they're thinking, wow, okay, cool. Where do I start with what he just said? What advice would you give them?
So start from what you have, right? Analyze what you have. You probably have controls in there. You probably have firewalls in there, at least, I hope. Next-gen firewalls, there's security already brought in. So when you look at it, analyze what you have. And does it work? Does it work to what you want it to function as? Taking that and then saying, now, what are my gaps? What can't I see? Or what can't I detect? Or what can't occur? What are the potentials that we have here? So, and then start taking those pieces and design your system, look at your subsystems, look at your people, process, and tech, and turn around and say, what's our major gap, right? So 2023, what would be my major gap? My other monitor keeps turning on and off.
That's cool.
Yeah, as you go through it. And now take that and say, where is the biggest gap that we have to take care of in 2023, right? So we know if we're regulated, we have to worry about regulations, you know. So government regulations, things like that, we have to worry about that. But take a look at, you know, ransomware. Take a look at data extortion, right? Data extortion is gaining a lot of ground. So if we get extorted, can we tell what left the environment? So and test it. There's ways of testing this day in and day out. Test it. Did we detect this? So as you drill through it and go say, you know, here's DLP, here's data extortion, they're related, right? So you can turn around and say, here's our subsystem that takes care of DLP and data extortion, which will tie into network monitoring, which is tie into EDR. So all this stuff kind of ties together. And that's where I started thinking about this holistic approach to a system.
You know, for how do you spend, if you had to like pick those slides that was like proactive, reactive, and the other one, where do you spend most of your time being the mature organization that you are?
So we're kind of in between active and proactive. So we have day-to-day things that we have to do, right? So that's a given. There's things a security practitioner has to do. You know, one is verifying that all the logs and that all the network traffic actually get to where we're monitoring on. So when you look at active, you have to go in and say, were the last 24 hours completely logged? Were the last 24 hours completely recorded? And this is where you run into issues, right? So as you look at that, look at what needs to be done. Of course, you have, you know, employees, you have all that, you know, they phishing, you have to review that. So, and then proactive, we attack our own environment. So we have products out there that attack, and then we attack it ourselves. We take a look at methods that we can write in Python or PowerShell and, you know, various other, you know, GitHub's a great area to download. Just be careful. There's a lot of fraud out there with GitHub that is being uncovered now. But take a look and design, you know, what are my top five risks, right? You can kind of go through and say, what are my top five risks? Well, phishing will definitely be in the top five. Phishing is pretty prominent, right? Data extortion, ransomware, there's lists out there. You can use whatever you want. Then go through and kind of break it down. So how many phishing campaigns were blocked, right? Then take a look how many got through the first layer, how many got through the second layer, how many got through the third layer. So those are all the active concepts, looking at your data, looking at analyzing what's going on in your environment, paradigm changes, right? I did mention that during that time, we've gone from an attached PDF doc to burying it underneath a link inside an email. Now they're kind of attaching both the document, you know. So as we progress our controls and as our controls mature, they'll pivot. They'll find other ways of doing it, right? So I think it was last year I attended a talk that said that perimeter breaches are now the most prominent way to deliver ransomware. And when you look at the dark web and what gets sold today, you'll see like RDP access to a company in wherever. Or I have shell to this, or SSH backdoor to this. They're constantly being sold. So there are two phases out there. There's one that's figuring out how to get in, and then the ransomware threat actors or the extortion threat actors are buying that and using that. So it's where do you start? So you have to start with what you have. That's the key. You're not going to run out and say, hey, we're going to just throw everything away and just start brand new. Unless you're greenfielding something, you know, starting from day one, then you kind of design it up. But you can get into a lot of different you know, rabbit holes and a lot chasing different things. But just make sure that you go through your system and say, does this do what it was meant to do? So this was meant to detect XYZ and block XYZ. So does it still do that? That's then you can take it further and further enhance it. add in other components, tie them together, create a massive, you know, data lake in the cloud with every log under the sun and mine through that. So that's some of the goals that I thought about.
Mr. Barto, the organization you work for is very lucky to have you. And I'm very lucky to have you on the podcast so many times.
Yeah,
you should probably be working for some critical infrastructure organization, just hopping from hopping, making sure they get their stuff together. That'd be very tiresome for you.
And yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, I started off in security roughly 20 years ago, and the shifts back then, we went from, you know, network to hardening to apps to data. Now there's so much out there. There's so many different angles, so many threat vectors, so many threats out there. You know, every once in a while you'll see an article, you know, a threat actor undiscovered for 8 months inside of an organization. And I mean, SolarWinds was an example of this. What are the top tier threat actors out there? And they can do magic. They're amazing at their job, because that is their job. That's how they make money. Ransomware threat actors make money encrypting your files and you paying for the key. That's how they make their money. They are a business. You know, it's a business. So we have to deal with an adverse business. And if they have the opportunity, if you give them the opportunity, then it's possible you will be a victim.
But no matter what's going on out there in the world, I know what you will be doing. Defending.
Yep. Being looking at defense, right? Looking at, you know, even sports, even, you know, concepts of, if you look at the old methodologies of, you know, how do you build a wall, right? We have many, many examples all through history of these giant walls made to hold people out, and eventually they do collapse. So that's kind of like the concept that I had with build a wall, and then as that kind of looks like it's falling apart, build another wall and build another wall. So some sieges never worked, but others did in history. And as I look back and say, you know, how would I learn from the past? What would I understand from the past? What has happened? And that's where I got into the cyclic model of some of these methods and techniques, right? There are going to be techniques we've never heard of, and, you know, using, you know, various methods of vulnerabilities in core files from Microsoft, or using a game that has a vulnerability to gain access. I mean, there's so much out there now. There's so much to defend, but you can get just lost chasing and chasing and chasing. But keep your goals, or keep looking at a system that, even if you do deviate from what you thought would exist or what you know exists, having that be able to pick up, you know, the next emerging threat. So oddly, with Log4j, we use an open source product to track it. And it was almost real time. We were able to pick out who was attacking us, block it dynamically. And, you know, it was whack-a-mole or cat and mouse, but, you know, we had the log, it was tailed, saw one come in. So we even saw the change that the structure of the attack. So we saw it go from just plain file, and then a little bit of parameter use, a little bit of, you know, Unicode, trying the user agent. I mean, we had this whole thing recorded in real time as it came in. So that's a product that I put out there to watch the perimeter, and oddly, it fell into a zero-day vulnerability logger. So
you are prepared.
I hope so. You don't know what tomorrow will bring.
I'd put my money on you, Jeff.
I mean, I'm waiting for November or December to see what vulnerability comes out. So every December we seem to have a new one come out, and that's right around mid-December, end of December. I want to see what gets discovered, I guess, out there.
what you're getting for Christmas this
year. Yeah.
This is the sound of me knocking on wood. Mr. Bartow, thank you for your time, and we will see you next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Ciao. Well, that's all for today, folks. Thank you for tuning in to the Mnemonic Security Podcast. If you have any concepts or ideas that you'd like us to discuss on future episodes, please feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn or to send us a mail to podcast@mnemonic.no. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.